Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
Welcome to the Songwriter Connection, the podcast that delves deep into the art and heart of songwriting. Each week, we gather around the dining room table to uncover the stories behind the songs. We invite you to join us on a journey to the creative minds of the songwriters who shape the melodies of our lives. From Nashville, Tennessee, here's your host, Dave Linehan.
Well, if you're listening on the day that it publishes, it is July the 3rd. Happy 4th of July. You're celebrating this holiday. And by the way, there's a song out there that I want to recommend to you. It's an artist by the name of Gina Powers, and it's streaming everywhere. It's a song called The Great Divide, co-written Gina and myself. And we think it's a real important song, and we hope that you'll check that out. Get to hear a little bit of what we do here. So thank you for joining us on the podcast. We've got a great guest today. She was born in Fort Worth, Texas, and she resides in Austin right now. And that, you know about the music scene in Austin. It's Natalie Price. How are you, Natalie?
Great. How are you?
Good to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man. Let me tell you, your friends Goldpine, Ben and Cassie, were so excited to meet you. They texted me right away and they said, "You've got to meet Natalie. And she'd be great on your podcast." And when I listened to your music and got to meet you at the Global Songwriters Connection, a little spring mixer, I just knew that you were perfect for the podcast. Love what you do. Thank you for coming.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure to meet you.
Awesome. Lisa, enjoying your music. And you know, I really enjoy the way you brand the music that we have said from the beginning. I have said that it is important to not worry so much about genre while you're trying to find your voice, you know? Be you. Define what you do. My friend, and I just absolutely adore her music, is Jamie Harris is a good example. She's been on the show twice, and Jamie calls her brand of music folk and roll.
Which, I love it,
which
yeah.
Fits her to a T. And you say you're Americinda, and yeah. I love that. Americinda. Yeah. Expand on that a little bit.
It really, saying that title really only works if you know what Americana is.
Yeah.
And so I have started asking people, well, do you know what Americana is? And if yeah. they're like, oh, yeah. And I'm like, oh, well, I'm Americinda.
Americinda.
So I am broadly Americana, but kinda. Like, I'm grasping at other things, too. With a full band, mm-hmm. I lean into the rock, and there's pop melodies, but it's still story-based, and it's yeah. still, there's a couple numbers that are stripped back, and it's just me and acoustic guitar and feels mm. folk. So, yeah.
Americana is a wide genre. I mean, it there's folk, there's blues, there's bluegrass, mm-hmm. There's even gospel, and alternative country, alternative rock. You hear a good mix, and that's why I love to listen to it here. In our town, Nashville, we've got a station called Roots Radio, WMOT. Do you have stations like that in Austin?
And locally we lean into, like, we have Sun Radio and we have KUTX, which is the local NPR, and they're on campus at UT, and yeah. they play a wide mix, and they also invest a lot in playing local music too.
Oh, I love that. See?
And so, but Austin leans a little more into rock and rock and roll. We still have our country, we have Americana, we have rap, we have pop, but it's definitely a little bit more of a rock and roll town. But you get a really good mix on local radio because we have a really good mix of music in town.
You do. Austin's such a great music town, isn't it?
It is.
I've never been, but someday.
You should come yeah. and hang out.
Someday.
Yeah.
Bring my guitar and see if I could fit in. You know, part of what you do, I came from a songwriting community in Cincinnati before I moved here. And we were part of NSAI, the National Songwriters Association International. And I was just in my radio career and meeting with them, and eventually I became a coordinator. But we had a breakout group that was called the Secret Writers Society, and we would meet and write, you know, a couple times a week. You had a very similar organization that you were writing with in the Austin area, didn't you?
Yes.
Yeah. And what did you guys call it? Tell me a little bit about that.
Are you talking about the Soul Writers?
Yeah, the Soul Writers. How wonderful. That's so cool.
It is, was started by a couple of friends of mine who they were inspired by Bob Schneider and Jason Mraz.
Ooh, wow.
Had a group. And you would, they made it, they kind of upped the ante and added, you know, a little more risk and accountability where you have a songwriting prompt every week.
Oh,
and
cool.
You have to turn in your song by midnight of the deadline or you get kicked out for that semester.
Wow.
And
it's an education.
It is.
Huh?
It's free to enter. It's kind of an invite only, or like you won't really know about it unless someone tells you, and you can just sign up online and they'll like extend an invite the next season. But that was just the kick that I needed, because what I was looking for, as I was getting more involved in kind of spreading my wings and finding my voice in Austin, mm-hmm. I was looking for community and I was looking for people who wanted to write, because I wanted to write. I just needed, I'm really people motivated.
Yeah.
And when I see other people hustling, I'm hustling too.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to be in a group of people that were making time and space to write. And that were willing to meet a deadline. And it was a perk that it didn't cost any money to join, but you would get kicked out for the semester if you didn't write your song. And I discovered, you know, I don't know if this is a pro or a con, but I discovered that for the first few years, the writing deadline was always Sunday night at midnight.
Uh-huh.
And I discovered that I always made time to write on Sundays. and sometimes I didn't start that song till like, you know, after 9 p.m. And there were some nights that I was like just really pulling at straws and writing gibberish and just crunching, pushing those words into a melody and like voice memo and uploading to SoundCloud and submitting that link. And you have to fill out a form on their website by midnight for that all to work. So there's like, and there were a couple moments when I was real close, but I made it. And that was, it became a really nice weekly rhythm. And I discovered that if I really do give myself a good space on Sunday, like, I don't know, a 12 to 4 p.m. is a really beautiful time to write. And if I didn't worry about, I don't need it to be highly produced. I don't need it to be this thing that could go immediately on the radio.
It's a little work.
Exactly. It's important to me to like, get an idea down, get it into a consumable format, and put that privately on my SoundCloud page.
So you still do that same appointment with yourself every Sunday?
It's not necessarily every Sunday. My appointments move around in that my rhythms are different now in that I make time with other people to write.
Uh-huh.
And I do write on my own as well, but it is not necessarily set on Sundays. It's a thing
gotcha.
That I am actually aware of as my life has shifted. I'm kind of realizing, you know, I think I need to reestablish at least a weekly rhythm, if not, because I'm writing with other people during
Good.
The week.
Yeah. So
but
you do
I haven't,
co-writing thing.
Yeah, yeah, I do co-writing. I wasn't really co-writing then because I didn't know anybody.
Yeah.
So, and I've been writing all my life. But I just didn't.
Do you think it's harder in Austin than Nashville to find that community?
Community of co-writers? Or
Like here in Nashville, they say, you just throw a stone. You know, Mark Ellenburn has been on the show. And people ask him all the time, how do I find co-writers? He said, well, you're in Nashville, just throw a stone.
Yeah, go to a coffee shop.
Yeah.
See somebody reading a book you like and start a conversation. They're probably a songwriter.
Probably.
Or talk to your barista.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the hilarious, but the thing is different about Nashville is that your barista probably has written hit songs.
Good.
And Austin, you know, the person you're sitting next to probably hasn't written a hit song.
Wow.
Austin is different. There's a lot of songwriters. There aren't as many people who are serious about co-writing. And I don't mean that as a slight. I just mean the culture is different in that. And I haven't quite figured out why. People have said maybe because the business really is in Nashville and there's less business in Austin, like companies like BMI and things, or
right.
BMI is in Austin now,
right.
But there aren't as many publishers
gotcha.
In Austin. There aren't as many. So
but it seems to me that for performing artist and songwriter, there are more opportunities to play for money.
Oh yes.
In Austin.
Yes, pros and cons. So it's harder to find people that are serious about co-writing. People write music, but they write it alone.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure why that is exactly. There are people to collaborate with, but it takes a little bit of time to find those people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's probably because there isn't a business of writing in Austin.
Gotcha. Well, that makes sense. It's more of an artist community.
It's an artist vibe, and it's about writing for yourself and getting your music out there.
Isn't that
however
something?
You do that. And so if you are a person that... I do have a few friends that have their own crew of people that they write with. There is some of that. Mm-hmm. But it's almost a little bit like a clique that you have to break into.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So... Awesome.
Well, I'm going to play a song from your record. Your release was back in September.
Yes.
Called... What was the name of this?
It was self-titled, Natalie Price.
Yeah, well, that's a good way to do it. And this is a song that you sang with our friend Jamie Harris, huh?
Yes.
What a thrill that must have been.
It was great, yeah.
We're going to talk about that relationship in just a little bit. Let's play All We Need.
Some days you never know what hits you in the face. Was it love? Was it allergies? Falling out of grace? Sometimes you never see what stops you on a dime. Was it greed or prosperity or stepping out of line? Ooh, everybody wrestles with their demons. Everybody's fighting to find freedom. Instead of lies, and then the light shines through the darkness. Fiction's all you find. Sometimes you think you know both sides of the debate, and there's a fight, and you get angry and start giving in to hate. Ooh, everybody wrestles with their demons. Everybody's fighting to find freedom. Hey. Everybody wants something, it moves, and all we need is love. With their demons, we're fighting to find freedom. Hey, yeah. Everybody needs an absolution. Everybody wants something that moves them. Ooh, everybody wrestles with their demons. Everybody's fighting to find freedom.
So simple. All we need is love.
Yes.
That's Natalie Price with the amazing Jamie Harris. And if you don't know Jamie, she's been on the podcast twice. Look for her in our archives. She's an amazing artist as well.
Agreed.
Natalie, you wrote that by yourself. So that was one of those ones you didn't co-write, huh?
That's true. It seems like the album was about 80%
solo. 80%
written. Solo.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Very cool. Great production, too. Tell us about your producer, and it's Mary Bragg, right?
Yes.
Man, what a sound.
She's great. I met her as an artist. Like, she is also an artist, songwriter, performing artist. Mm-hmm. And I met her at SWRFA, the Southwest Regional Folk Alliance, in probably 2019.
Wow.
And she was a showcasing artist that particular year. And I guess I met her, I don't know if Grace Pettis was there But I just was, she performed and on stage, and I was like, wow, she's got a really great voice. Her melodies are really great. I remember meeting her later, being really complimentary and, you know, like giving her my schedule of late night showcases. Because that's what you do at those conferences. Like, I'm playing at 2 a.m. in this room and you should come see. And
yeah,
she actually showed up to one of my showcases. And I just, you know, that just showing up like goes a long way, you know.
Yeah, it sure does.
And she, that felt good. She was cool. And then the next year was 2020. And I have a friend, her name's Grace Pettis, and she did an album, I think in 2020, in the summer of 2020.
During the pandemic.
When everybody was masked. So they did the whole thing masked and socially distanced. But amazing. To their credit, you know, it's an amazing album. Working Woman is the album they did. And
Grace Pettis
You'll have to check her out.
Yep.
She was the one who originally told me about Mary producing it. I was like, wait, Mary Bragg is a producer?
Mm.
And so, and then I heard Grace's album and I was like, well, that's amazing. Like, wow. And it was crunchy and rock and, but also sensitive and folk and other places too. And
Grace, it's Americana.
She's great. And awesome. So both of them are great. And so
fantastic.
I was really impressed with Grace's particular emphasis on that album was that everybody who touched that album was a female or female identifying person. So from producer to all the musicians who played on it, the graphic designer, all of the co-writers, all of the folks that sang on it, the Indigo Girls sang on it. Like everyone, the publicist, the photographer, everyone had anything to do with that album besides her manager, who's a man. Female or female identifying. And so that was really important to her. And then it was called Working Woman. So all ties together. It was really great.
Fantastic.
And mine wasn't quite that. Like my point wasn't that we're only hiring women for this project, but I do love working with women and creating really good things with other women. And I work with a lot of really incredible men as well. But I love the idea of working with Mary Bragg as a producer, because I'm like, you know what? Do you know how many songs are on the radio that were both written and performed? Not both, three things. Written, performed, and produced by a woman? Few to none.
Yeah, right.
Grace Pettis' album. Maybe a couple of others, but very, very rare. And so I just enjoy being a part of moving the needle forward a little bit.
That's great. Good for you.
Yeah, that's so awesome. It wasn't... Grace was like the 100% thing. Mine was like, I don't know, 60%. Mm-hmm. And we... Mary, to her credit, put together a really incredible team. And I know Jamie Harris from when she lived in Austin. She's a part of my early coming into myself, coming into my voice.
Really?
Hearing her in Austin in 2012 was really incredible. Actually, right before she got sober. And it was cool to then come full circle, be in Nashville. Mary knew Jamie and like invited her into the project. And so
Mary Boucher.
Yeah, it was very, no, Mary Bragg.
Oh, Mary Bragg. Oh, okay.
Mary Bragg knew Jamie as well and brought her into the album. Okay. And so,
And Mary's confused.
Oh yeah. So she joined the project and that was awesome. Really, really cool. And I'm grateful to her.
Cool.
And when I play that song live, a lot of times I'll wear purple heart glasses as an ode to Jamie.
Oh, that's so cool. And Jamie always wears the heart, red heart glasses.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah.
Very good. Well, that's awesome. Going back to that song that we just heard with you and Jamie, and that you co-wrote. I always like to point out the lesson in the song, and to me, which really stands not just the groove and the production and everything, but I love unusual rhymes. You know, things like demons and freedom, and absolution, what's the word you rhyme with absolution? I can't remember.
Something that moves them.
Moves them. That kills me. And I love that. Now, where did you learn that? Has that always been in the way you write? Is that your style?
Somewhat. I think part of it is I do appreciate a perfect rhyme.
Yeah.
But I do acknowledge that a lot of the way I write is kind of standing up to perfection and kind of pushing back a little bit.
Yeah.
Because I grew up in a Christian bubble with a lot of expectations, a lot of do's and don'ts, and you got to live up perfectly to this standard.
Yeah.
I also, you know, I'm a recovering perfectionist, the eldest daughter of six kids with a lot of responsibility growing up. And I like to do things right. I don't just like to make a good choice. I want to make the right choice.
Mm.
And that's a lot of pressure.
That's the hardest thing to do, they say.
It is. And so I learned about poetry, and poetry is very rigid and structured, and you have a certain number of syllables. And I grew up only listening to Christian music or Christian radio. Yeah, that was all we were allowed to listen to.
Wow.
And everything else was secular or like, I don't want to say more dramatic things, but secular was the word and off limits.
I get you.
And so there was this fascination, I guess, when I was in high school and I started driving myself to school and I could listen to whatever I wanted in the car. I discovered the Beatles.
Yeah.
Loved the oldies station. And after I was consuming that for a while, you know, I switched over to country, and it was like, you know, they were playing early 2000s. Tim McGraw and Miranda Lambert was just coming around at that time. And I was getting into kind of those songs. And it was just interesting to notice that depending on how you pronounce things, like a lot of different things can rhyme together.
A lot of different things.
And also, I think another really interesting artist who I learned that it was slant rhyming.
Slant. Now, I've not heard that before. Share that.
Or I think Jeff Tweedy calls it like family rhymes or something.
Wow.
And
a friend of mine calls them cadence rhymes.
Oh, it's where you kind of more rhyme the vowel than the vowel and the consonants together. And so a really great case study of that is Sia, who wrote that song Chandelier.
Okay.
I want to swing from the chandelier, from the chandelier. I want to live like tomorrow doesn't exist, like it doesn't exist. So she rhymes chandelier with exist. And on paper, that does not work. But that little ear, in the pronunciation, ear, exist, like the way that she, I'm not saying it in a helpful way, but the way she sings it is beautiful and it works. And it's convincing and I believe it. And so I think sometimes if it's too perfect, I don't believe it. And so if it's a little like grittier and less perfect, it's more believable to me.
First guy I wrote with in this town, he was very adamant that it had to be perfect rhymes. And I'm like, really? Seriously? Think about that. I mean, there's so many perfect rhymes, you know. And to me, it was the surprise factor that you know, I didn't expect to hear that rhyme. But it makes sense. It's more important, I think, to make sense and fit the song than to worry about a perfect rhyme or not, because it gets predictable. I hate it when I like to go to a lot of writers' rounds. You know, I play a lot of them, so I always listen, and I hate it when I can predict what the rhyme is going to be.
I feel the same way. I think that's part of it too, is I like to bring a little bit of surprise and edge to something that you're not expecting.
Did you write Heart and Apart just because they rhymed, or did it really matter to the song, you know?
Which part?
Heart and Apart. You know, how many times do you hear that?
Oh, right,
you know?
Right.
You know what I mean? So as I go into a writing session anymore, I'll say, okay, say we got the structure down and we know where our rhyme scheme is going to be, which you can break that every now and then too. You know, I always will say, we don't need a rhyme for home. We need an O rhyme.
Yeah.
Right?
That's what I'll say too.
I rhyme. We got too many I rhymes here. That's, you know, you feel the same way?
I do the same. I'll rhyme the vowel as opposed to the word.
Vowel. There you go.
Yeah, I love that.
And sometimes it's what they call the schwa, right? It's not a perfect vowel. It's like a, you know, you know. But anyway, into the song. The lesson in the song. Hey, pick up that Takamine. Before we take a break, I want to hear, we're live around the dining room table when we tape this, and we've got great sound here, and you brought your Takamine, and Natalie, you're just a fantastic artist. You know what? And I wanted to take this time to also say, I was watching a lot of your videos, and some of it were auditions for Tiny Desk Concert that NPR does, and I love that show. And the one video you did just blew me away. You zoomed in on what was really a tiny desk prop.
Yes.
I thought that was so brilliant.
I use it the same one every video now because it just makes me happy.
Oh, it's so
I bought
cool.
it, and I was like, what else am I going to do with this besides get rid of it? I might as well use it every year in the video.
It's your tiny desk. I love it. That's wonderful. How did that go? Did they choose you?
No.
They should. Maybe they will. They will eventually.
In 2020, I did The Island on Kalimba as my entry.
We're going to talk about that after the break. Yeah.
NPR did give me a shout out on their Top Shelf.
Yeah.
But I've entered every year since, but I've never had a shout out or anything else from there. But yeah.
I understand. Okay.
Do you have a request?
Do I have... Well, done. You got to do done. I mean...
That was my question. I was like, do you want me to play it live or do you want to play the album?
I want to hear live music around the dining room table.
Okay. Well, that's always a pleasure. Oh, 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 oh. I think I'll take a smoke and never have before to keep my fingers busy and my body off the floor. You had me at your silhouette, you in your hat and hair. And when I saw you in the light, I had to get some air. What have you done to me? Done, done to me. Done, done, done to me. Oh, oh, oh. Well, lately I've been hungry, but I can't seem to stomach food because you make me so damn nervous. It's a strangest truth. I wrote that script out in my head, the one where we were friends, and somehow it made sense to me, but I couldn't read the end. What have you done to me? Done, done to me. Done, done, done to me. What have you done to me? Done, done to me. Done, done, done to me. They think that I'm a robot programmed from my youth, that I don't make my choices or consider. And the truth is, and the truth is, and the truth is that I got a little drunk last night and lost all of my clothes and woke up with you on my mind. I'll never let you know.
So you got drunk and lost all your clothes.
Yeah.
Must have been tequila.
It's probably whiskey.
That's probably whiskey. You know what? Repetition is your friend as a songwriter.
Yeah.
Done, done to you. And in the way you say it, done, done to me. That's so cool. And it kind of southern, you know? And when you got to the really important part of the song about the truth is, and you say it again, the truth is, and then you say it again. Now I know something really important is coming. So that's really good technique.
Thanks. Awesome. There's that particular part and the truth is, the truth is, the truth is. I originally had a much longer bridge.
Did you?
And it was a case where in hindsight, it was so long. It was just long enough that it loses its impact. And I played it for David Ramirez at like...
David Ramirez?
5:30 in the morning at in someone's living room. And I was like, well, hey, I have a new song. He was like, yeah, play me your song. I'm like, all right.
Wow.
And he was like, you know, he's like, take it or leave it. And he's like, your bridge. And I was like, yeah, I know. I'm like, does it, you know, we're just discussing it. And he's like, you could just say the truth is. And I'm like, huh. And I went home and played with it. And I was like, you know, he's right.
Works.
It works. Yeah. I was like, all right.
Sometime a different point of view is all you need, you know?
Saying less actually meant more in the song.
Ah, less is more, huh?
And then I said something, I think the last chorus, I like changed the very last line to say, and I'm done.
Mm.
Something like that.
Yeah.
And Mary Makes had sense. A comment, Mary had a comment about it, and she was like, you know, do you want to say that? And I was like, oh, that's a good question. And I thought about it and I was like, no, I think we could just, we discussed it. She pointed out, she's like, you could just say, keep it the way that it is. What have you done to me? And I'm like, that's true. It was like I was trying to take back my power or something by like saying I'm done or I'm done with this or I'm done with you or whatever. And I think that it is truer to who I am to let it kind of sit in that uncomfortable place of like
I
the
like.
Question of just sitting in that place of acknowledging what how have you affected me in my life.
I've heard you say that in writing, you like to leave things unresolved.
I do.
And I think that's important to leave it to the listener to decide, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of cool.
Thanks.
It's a good philosophy. We're going to talk more about your songwriting philosophy in just a little bit after the break. But going into the break, I want to play a little bit of this song called The Island, which is actually the first song I listened to. I saw you on a video playing this strange instrument. What's it called?
The kalimba.
Kalimba. Kind of explain what that is, folks don't know.
It's a wooden box with metal tines, a finger piano of sorts. It's a South African instrument.
Awesome. It's beautiful. And your voice on this, I'm just going to play a little bit of this so people can hear it. Gorgeous.
He said, honey, you may have angels keeping you in the light. I've got these demons and they're holding me tight. So if you've a moment and can spare me the time, I'm in over my head, won't you throw me a lifeline? 'Cause I'm lost in the ocean.
Beautiful. Let's play the chorus.
Searching for the shore, you're the island that I've been looking for. I hope you let me land, 'cause I can't bear to let you go. Oh, 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 oh. He said, love.
That's Natalie Price, who's our guest on the Songwriter Connection podcast. You'll find this on her self-titled album that's streaming everywhere right now. We're going to take a little break, and when we come back, we're going to talk more with our guest Natalie today.
I always feel the pressure to find the perfect gift for my relatives. In this case, whether you're sending an unforgettable gift or treating yourself to everyday perfection, Omaha Steaks delivers the world's best steak experience. For me, I'm not just into steaks. I like all types of meat. That's why I'll usually get the Winter's Best Seller Pack. It comes with juicy fillets, chicken breasts, pork chops, and even burgers. Omaha Steaks offers unrivaled quality and variety, and every bite is backed by their 100% guarantee. A family-owned company with over 100 years of experience in the meat industry. Save big on unforgettable gifts with Omaha Steaks. Visit omahasteaks.com for 50% off site-wide and earn an extra 20% off select favorites during their cyber sale. And for an extra $35 off, use promo code YUM at checkout. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code YUM at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. Go to omahasteaks.com to get 50% off site-wide plus an extra 20% off select favorites and more limited-time deals during their cyber sale. And use promo code YUM at checkout for an extra $35 off. Minimum purchase may apply. See site for details. A big thanks to our advertiser, Omaha Steaks.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of U.S. Soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
If you're an HVAC technician and a call comes in, Grainger knows that you need a partner that helps you find the right product, fast and hassle-free. And you know that when the first problem of the day is a clanking blower motor, there's no need to break a sweat. With Grainger's easy-to-use website and product details, you're confident you'll soon have everything humming right along. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You're listening to The Songwriter Connection with Dave Linehan. Find us on Facebook and YouTube at The Songwriter Connection Podcast. And find Dave at thedaveconnection.com. Now back to the show with your host, Dave Linehan.
We're on mission 1 million by the end of the summer, and we're closing in it. We're well over 700,000 streams worldwide now. So thanks for spreading the word around and for listening to The Songwriter Connection. Our guest is Natalie Price from Austin, Texas, and she's making her way through town. She was you were in Cincinnati last night performing.
I was, yes, that's true.
Awesome. You perform a lot. You get out there, don't you?
That is the goal.
That is the goal.
That is the goal.
You love to perform your songs, don't you?
I do.
Yeah.
I refer to the circle or the cycle of joy.
Ah,
and
tell me about that.
As an artist, as a creative, it's not just songwriting. I believe that it affects any kind of art or creative endeavor that you do. There's this sense of satisfaction and joy that comes from creating something.
Yep.
And it could be a really beautiful, wonderful meal. Mm. And it, to you, it tastes amazing. To me, hearing the song that I just wrote, it feels amazing to finish a song, and it feels amazing to be excited about it and to play it for myself. There's a certain joy that happens when you've completed something. Mm. But that's only part of the cycle of joy. The other part is sharing it with someone else.
Yeah.
And so there's this element of being an artist that I enjoy that's like not just writing the song and doing the work of creation, but it's doing the work of sharing that with someone else too and connecting.
Mm.
And so to me, one of the most beautiful things about music is not just how it makes me feel as a person, but it's the connection to that artist that created it, is the appreciation of like, man, I'm so glad that Mozart wrote that song, or David Ramirez wrote that. Mozart composed the thing and David Ramirez wrote the song, and then they wrote down the music and or performed it, and now I can hear it and I can enjoy it. And so I might not ever interact with the artist, but I can appreciate that the art exists.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like in a weird way having a child too. Like, you go through all the work of creating and having the kid, but then eventually they go off and they interact with the world, you know, apart from you.
Yeah.
And the song is kind of the same way. Like, I don't have any control.
They're your babies.
Once it's out there. Kind of.
And you know, they take on a life of their own. They grow, and you know.
That is true. They may outgrow me.
Yeah. You never know.
Yeah.
You just never know. I had a song, it was kind of a regional hit in Cincinnati that we wrote called Hometown Hero, and it was at the start of the Iraq War. And it was played around a lot in different veterans organizations. And just a couple of weeks ago, I had a gentleman contact me. He said, my name is Brad Powers. I don't know if you remember me, but I'm moving to Nashville and I recorded your song, Hometown Hero. And I go, you did? I never heard that. And he sent me a copy of it. And I'm like, whoa, dude, that's amazing. You did a wonderful job. So they take on a life. I mean, here we are 20 years later. It still has a life of its own, you know. So songs are like that. It's really weird. You can keep them in your computer or on your phone, or you can get out there and share them. You know, and I think that's where I am. Is I never considered myself as an artist, right? More of a songwriter. But then I thought, well, you know, nobody else is recording these, so I'm gonna. And I'm really enjoying performing these days. And I try to do as many writers' rounds. I don't say no. Sometimes I'm 4 or 5 times a week. And but I love it. I just love that feeling because, you know, and probably you get the same feeling. You know when a song is working when you're playing it live, don't you?
Yes.
You know if they're getting it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a song with that. On the opposite side, there's a song I've just written recently that I have been pretty excited about. But as I've played it live, I feel like there's something about it that's not working. And so I've been less excited about the song. So I'm like, something's going to have to change because I feel it dying as I'm playing it. I'm like, that's such a weird feeling.
And it's a weird feeling.
It's a great idea. Mm-hmm. And I'm really excited for it to work. But it's not yet working in the room. And so I'm currently in the situation where I'm not sure what to do with it.
That's when it's rewrite time, right?
Yeah.
Sit back. Maybe it's something in the melody. What is it? You know, when you figure it out. That's sometimes it's good to have a different ear. Listen to what isn't working. What do you think? What do we need to change?
Yeah.
It's just amazing how that works out. And sometimes somebody, like you said before, say, well, why don't you shorten that bridge or whatever, you know, and it may work. So that's an interesting feeling. I also read that you draw on a lot of personal experience when you're writing, which makes sense. They say write what you know. But I also know people that just make up stories, you know. But you like to delve into personal things.
Well, that's been... Well, originally, I wasn't ever writing anything personal because it felt like nobody wants to hear from me or my personal experience or care what I have to say.
I used to feel that way.
And I also... you know, was a younger person who maybe didn't have a lot of life experience, or the life experience that I lived, I didn't think it was anything out of the ordinary. And I felt like no one wanted to hear the voice of a kid, you know, a middle-class homeschooled kid in a suburb, you know? I was like, what? That's not an extraordinary life. It didn't seem like an extraordinary life to me. It was a good life. Mm-hmm. I felt like I had a good relationship with my parents. We had a healthy family that loved each other.
That's great.
And we, you know, pros and cons to everything. Like,
sure.
Didn't get along with a couple of my siblings, but there was always someone to hang out with.
Did they support you on your musical journey?
Not really.
No?
Not.
Had other plans?
Not until more recently.
Really?
Like, there's just... And it took me a long time to realize this. So it's not anything against anyone in my family. But no one... has any personal relationship with anyone in the music industry. No songwriter, no performer. No one knows anyone that makes a living making music.
You didn't come from a musical family?
No. I mean, my dad played trombone in high school. My mom played flute.
Okay.
And
marching band kind of thing? Yeah.
Yeah. And okay. But they don't participate in music as adults. There was no one would understand what like jamming together and like creating something off the cuff. Like none of that stuff was happening.
Right.
And my family, there are creatives in my family. Like my dad is really great at drawing.
Mm-hmm.
And my grandmother would like draw the backgrounds to like the window displays in stores with like charcoals and stuff.
Wow.
My great grandmother was a seamstress. I just learned in the last like year or two, on my mom's side, my granddad has started square dancing again.
Awesome.
Or just square dancing. And I asked if he and my grandma, before she passed, like in their young life, if they'd ever danced together. And I got to this random story I'd never heard of where he said his parents, his dad liked to dance, but his mom thought dancing was of the devil. Or something. So his parents didn't really do dance or do music together. But my granddad said that his dad actually played piano at the local silent film theater.
Oh, neat.
I that's the first touch of musicality.
Oh my gosh.
Besides just my grandmother singing in church and singing altos and me hearing different parts. Like that was the first real musical touch in my family I've even heard of.
Wow.
And so no, there's just no active engagement in creating music in my family. All of my siblings have had piano lessons and occasionally some of them will play something. But no one like pursues it as a career.
Gotcha.
And I think
when did you decide you were going to do that? When did you pick up your guitar first? When did you learn?
I was in junior high or high school.
Really?
When one of my grandmas gave me a guitar.
Wow.
And I had already been writing and making music on my own, but now I had an instrument, a medium to like put the actual music with my melodies and lyrics. Mm-hmm. And I was starting to actually listen to other music and I was being like, I actually felt things. I was actually emotionally impacted by other music.
Yeah.
And that's when I was realizing, I was kind of putting it together. You know, I make music for myself, mm-hmm. by myself, sing to myself in my room. I'm enjoying this song that I hear on the radio. And I'm like, it took me a while to realize somebody else wrote that song.
Yeah.
And this artist is singing it and I'm being impacted by it. But I was like, I want to do that. Whatever that is, I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I was trying to verbalize that to my parents. Mm-hmm. And even like, hey, I want to record these songs and I want to spend this money that my grandma just gave me and I can record exactly two songs with this money. And then being like, no, you're not allowed to use your money to record. Oh, and like, what? No. And things like, you need to say goodbye to this dream was one thing that my dad said. And another time I told my mom what I wanted to do and she'd said something like, well, I hope you don't succeed. And
breaks my heart.
I know. I say all that to say we're good now. That's where I came from, and that's where they were then. We've all grown since then. They're supportive now, and we've talked about those conversations, and we've reconciled those conversations. And my mom, like, we're good.
Yeah.
But in that moment, it was crushing.
Yeah.
And I realized my art with them is not safe. Like, I need to find my own way, my own place, my own path with this to keep this art safe, or it will die.
Wow.
And I think that's probably one of the reasons I moved out of the Dallas area and moved to Austin, is just to kind of subconsciously protect my art.
That is such an amazing story to me. How old were you when you decided that I had to protect my art?
I didn't decide it. Looking back, I see that's what I did.
That's what you did.
Yeah. I sort of...
Looking back, that's what I did. I love it.
I wouldn't have been able to verbalize that. Mm-hmm. Nor would I have admitted it, because I wouldn't have even had the courage to say it's what I wanted to do. It wasn't until I got to Austin that I looked around and I'm like, oh my gosh, my people. These are my people.
Oh yeah.
These are people that make music and they sing songs and they sing boldly on a stage. And I was too shy to even get on a stage.
Yeah.
And I saw other people doing it and I was like, that is what I want to do. They're doing it. I can do it too. This is a real thing. And it's worth doing, and it's worth doing it well. And that'll happen around 2013. This is all kind of like coming together. 2012 to 2013 was huge. Like,
yeah.
Like,
you're finding your
realizations
voice.
Of like,
yeah.
I'm seeing music that's inspiring to me. I'm seeing people who are professionals doing their professional art. And I'm realizing this is not a game like my family thinks this is, or like a phase. This is reality. This is how some people make a living. And this is absolutely what I want to do.
Wow.
And so it just took a while to like gradually be brave enough to do it. And 2013, I was realizing it's worth doing. It's what I wanted to do. But 2017 is when I fully committed financially to making it happen.
Gotcha. And doing the whole indie thing. Yeah.
2017 was where I had taken a corporate job the year before so that I could save up money to record music.
You're doing like mortgages and stuff, right?
No, I worked for a mortgage company, but I was on the marketing side. Nobody's financial future was in my hands. Mm-hmm. And I took that job so I could afford to record music. And a year and a half later, I still couldn't afford to record music. Mm. And I was so frustrated. This is like October 2017. I just remember crying that day, looking at my finances. I had some credit card debt. I couldn't just go into a studio and record what I wanted. Mm. And so I remember it was like a day of prayer. It was a day of like reconciling all my finances and reordering things in my life and fully committing to doing it. And I remember like having a conversation with God about it and just looking at my printing off bank statements and him pointing out like, you know, all of my subscriptions that I could stop, certain amounts of charitable giving that was unnecessary. And I'd like within just, pausing subscriptions and reordering and pausing certain gifts, like, I brought back $500 a month into my bank account. And then also I got at that point, if I was doing music and had a full-time job, I got three other jobs.
You did?
In that. So I did a catering job. I worked at a clothing store and then I was like pet sitting and stuff on the side.
You did what was necessary to make it happen.
I was throwing out my bag to make it happen. And, that was October of 2017. And within 3 months of just, I had paid off my credit card debt of, I think it was around $5,000.
Oh, God.
I'd paid off $5,000. Yeah. I had just jumped and made the last couple payments on my car. So I paid off my car.
Wow.
And then light at the end of the tunnel. And come December, so I'd paid my debt. I'd paid off my car. And by March of the next year, so 3 months after that, I had saved up $6,000 to record the album. I had studio time booked.
Wow.
And I went in the studio, I think it was April or May. I was in the studio. I was in the studio in March. It was just insane how it all came together. When you fully commit, but also like the things I sacrificed were I didn't go home for Thanksgiving, Christmas, or New Year's. I didn't really hang out with anyone. I didn't really go out at night. I worked every night.
Yeah. Yeah.
I went from my full-time job to my part-time job. And then on the weekends, I went to the other part-time jobs. And, that was not a season that I want to do all the time,
but
that I did what I needed to for that season. And that was a really fast season of, I'm just really, it was personal growth and building and proving to myself too that no, I can put my head down. I can put my nose to the grinding wheel. I can burn the candle at both ends for a limited season and get this job done. And so that first EP, the one I put out in 2019, that is a product of that season and me committing in 2017. And I'm really proud of that work. And
is that out there? Can we listen to that?
Absolutely. That's great. It's called Through the Fog.
Through the Fog. Okay. We'll look for that. Nellie Price is our guest. Pick up that Takamine. Let's play another song, girl.
Okay. So this one is called Give a Damn. I wrote it in 2019. Okay. And actually, this is for the Acoustic Guitar Project. Have you heard of the Acoustic Guitar Project?
I haven't. Tell us.
Oh my gosh. It's such a great nonprofit organization started by a guy named David Adams. And he is in New York, and it came about kind of off the cuff. He had a friend, a songwriter, who hadn't written songs in a while. And Dave loved this songwriter and loved their work and was really kind of bummed out that this person was just like not writing anymore.
Oh.
And so Dave just like put a guitar in his hands and said, "Hey, I want you to have this for a week and I want you to write a song on it." And for whatever reason, that's what that songwriter needed to, like, get over the block that was happening.
Wow.
And so this new song was born, and that gave Dave the idea for this nonprofit called the Acoustic Guitar Project. And so in every city where they are, they're in cities around the world. There is one in Nashville, I think.
Is there? Okay.
In every city, there's a curator. And there's also an acoustic guitar specific to that city. And with that acoustic guitar, there's like a Zoom recorder and like a tuner and like, you know, an accoutrement of things with the guitar to like, it's a package.
That's wonderful.
And so the curator every year chooses five artists in that area that they will pass that guitar on to keep that guitar for a week. And then at the end of that season, there's a performance where all of those songwriters will perform several songs, and the song that they wrote on the guitar is one of them.
Look it up.
And so
sounds great.
I was chosen to be a part of that class of 2019, and I was given the guitar. Only it wasn't a full week. They were a little rushed that year, and I only had it for a couple of days.
Mm.
And around the same time, I had just found out that a good friend of mine had landed himself in the hospital, and it was very serious. Mm. And I got really upset with him because he wouldn't let anyone visit. He wouldn't tell anyone where he was. We couldn't send cards or treats or anything. And I was really upset with him because I knew that he had a lot of people that really cared about him and would visit and would send cards and gifts and things. Mm. And it made me very angry. And, you know, it was within those 2 days that I had to write a song. And so I ended up writing a song about it. And that's where this song came from, is called Give a Damn. And there's a particular four-letter word in there that I wouldn't normally use on, you can't use on the radio, and I wouldn't in a podcast, but it felt like the right word to use in the situations. And sometimes the best thing about a song is that you say the thing in the song that you wish you could say in person.
Mm.
And as a person who doesn't necessarily drop a bunch of four-letter words in my everyday sentences, it holds even more weight, I think, when you use it on purpose, intentionally, in a spot.
Gotcha.
And I will say, though, that it is the first time I've used a particular word in a song where I got a call from my mom later. She found a recording on YouTube, and she's like, "Did you say?" It's like, "Yes, ma'am. You want to talk about it?"
Well, so, if you're listening and there are kids in the room, just a warning.
It is the nicest use of the word. But anyways, just this was written for a friend, and he's out, he's alive today.
Good.
He's out in the world, and
that's good.
I'm glad to say, but we were all worried for a time, and this was it's a song of friendship and a song of caring, and
awesome.
I'll often say, if you're that person that has trouble letting people take care of you, this song is about you.
Wow. Well, people are like that. Yeah.
Yeah, and if you're sometimes that person that cares too much, this song is for you.
Mm-hmm.
Give a damn. Well, I'm not your mother, I'm not your lover, I've got no built-in rights, and I'm not your father, I'm not your doctor. But I can tell it's serious. Don't say you'll be there soon.
When you're in a hospital room, I love a good joke, but this one isn't funny. You've got a broken heart, you've got a fucking start, letting your friends give a damn. Oh, because I'm a friend and I care about you, dear. I wish that you cared more about you, too. 'Cause if you don't care, the battle is twice as hard. 'Cause I have to fight you and try to convince you that you're worth it.
Song hits me, and I'll tell you why off when we get off the mic. But you know what? Thank you for that. It's a great song. Great song. Natalie Price has been our guest. Natalie, so good to get to know you a little bit more. I wish you more success. And next time you come through, I hope you'll come by too. And tell your friend, Grace, that we want to invite her on the podcast as well.
All right. Yeah. Will do.
Very cool. All the best. Where are you heading from next?
Going back to Texas on Wednesday.
You play anywhere regular around there that people in the Austin area can see you or just look for you?
All of the info, I keep it pretty updated on natpricemusic.com.
Natpricemusic.com. And you also have a webpage. That's your webpage. But you also have like YouTube and all the socials as well. So I hope people will find you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for your time. Do appreciate you.
We hope you enjoyed this intimate glimpse into the world of songwriting and found inspiration in the stories shared by our talented guests. Remember, the magic of music lies not only in the notes and chords, but in the emotions and experiences woven into every lyric. Until next time, keep listening, keep creating, and keep the melodies alive.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US Soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.